You've been lied to, but you don't know how. You've searched. You've struggled. You've cried out. You want the truth, but where is it? You've wandered. You fought. You've strived, and you have not been satisfied. What is truth? Where is truth? Who is truth? The kingdom of God. Mind control. The last days. Higher dimensions. Unity. The power of faith. Discovering the truth. Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father but through me. God has promised that he will hide us under his feathers, and under his wings we will trust. His truth shall be our shield and our buckler. Discovering the Truth with Dan DeVaughn is the premier program that is designed to center you on the kingdom of God, to equip you with faith in Jesus Christ, and to unveil the truth behind the lies. This program is designed to show you how to become more than you have ever imagined through the power of truth. You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. And now, prepare for your host, Dan DeVaughn.
You're listening to Discovering the Truth with Dan DeVaughn. This program is designed to center you on the kingdom of God, to equip you with faith in Jesus Christ, and to unveil the truth behind the lies. This program is a production of Bride Ministries, and you can find us at www.bridemovement.com and www.thefireplacechurch.org, where every Friday and Sunday night at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, we have live worship, at live service, live teaching, followed by live internet-based moderated discussion groups that are accessible by clicking a simple button on our website. So definitely hang out with us, except this Friday and Sunday, because we're taking a little vacation here at Bride Ministries. A lot of our moderators are also taking vacations, and we just felt, you know, Thanksgiving, it's going to just be the easiest thing to say, everybody, just have a good time, you know. God gave us family, God gave us friends, and fellowship is really part of the heart of God for us. And so this weekend, there is no Fireplace Church. There also won't be any Fireplace Church the weekend of Christmas, that Friday and then Sunday. Actually, this year is Christmas Day. We won't be having any Fireplace Church services that weekend, but we will be back on New Year's. So anyway, I am so excited that it is the end of the year. I'm going to be taking some time off this month and next month. And Discovering the Truth with Dan DeVaughn will still continue to go out. I'm just saying, I'm going to be taking some time off. You won't know it if you're a listener. And I am so looking forward to that, because, man, oh, man, has this year been a wild ride. You know, in the year of 2015, Bride began to grow. This year, the growth of this ministry has been explosive. Absolutely explosive. And we've seen a lot of changes, a lot of transitions. We've endured quite a bit of attack, and we are continuing to just put our foot in the sand and say, we will not stop. We will continue to preach the kingdom. We will continue to help survivors. We will continue in doing everything that the Lord has mandated for us to do. And we're going to display the heart of God at every step. And so we just continue to look forward to expanding. Guys, you are going to get to look forward to more and more conferences. As a matter of fact, we're preparing to do Advanced Spiritual Warfare number 2 on December 17th. So some of you that have taken Advanced Spiritual Warfare number 1 know the Advanced Spiritual Warfare course is advanced. It is where we go out there, cosmic, galactic. You're like, oh, that sounds like fun. I want to be in there. If you haven't already taken a discipleship course through Bride Ministries, I'm sorry, it's not open to you. The Advanced Spiritual Warfare courses are only offered to those that have been through at least one of our discipleship courses here at Bride Ministries. And if you want to be able to take Advanced Spiritual Warfare, courses in the future, just be sure to sign up for the next round of discipleship. There'll be more discipleship starting sometime in January and then going forward from there. So just look forward to those emails if you're on our email list and sign up when the opportunity presents itself. I am going to say we're going to be getting into some really, really cool things in this Advanced Spiritual Warfare Conference, including how to get freedom from reptilian genetics, draconian genetics, human persecutors. We're even going to get into timeline correction and that ministry. And so we are going to really have a good time. There's a shameless plug. That email will be going out to those that have been through Bride Ministries discipleship courses in a few days, maybe a week or so at the most. So with that said, folks, we have some books available. We have a lot of other conferences we plan to do starting in January. I am looking at a conference with me and Dr. Rob Ruckert on the human spirit, just a whole day or two teaching specifically on the human spirit, its function, how to get more engaged with your human spirit that God designed and put inside of you. And I tell you what, this is a revolution in the body of Christ that's coming, folks. It's based around this revelation that we have a spirit. We have a human spirit that is designed by God, that is his candle on the inside of us, searching all the inward parts, that is absolutely indispensable in the execution of the ministry we've been given in the earth. Folks, that'll be coming in January, and that will be open, actually. So as long as you are on our email list, you can sign up. And so that email will go out soon enough, maybe in the next few weeks. That's all I have to say for now. Folks, I really want you to enjoy your Thanksgiving. And today we're going to be talking with Robert Vandreis Mitchell, Illuminati defector extraordinaire. His story is just out of this world, literally out of this world. And we're going to be getting into it today on timelines and what actually exists in other timelines, as well as black-eyed children. You're not going to want to miss this. And by the way, before I just say anything else, you know, Bride Ministries is not small. We are growing, we are expanding, and every week we are spending, you know, a lot of money to do what we do, to help the survivors that we help, to execute the Fireplace Church weekly, to cover the expenses of having staff. And, you know, we're advancing the kingdom. Folks, we are building alongside of you. And realistically, the way it works is the more that we are able to bring in, the more we are able to do. That's just how this thing plays out. You know, we build the infrastructure, we build the strategies, and then when we are able to afford to increase, expand, so on and so forth, we do. And so I want to invite you to partner with us. If you have been listening to us for a long time, have never considered becoming a financial partner of Bride, it's really easy. Just click a donate button on bridemovement.com or thefireplacechurch.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 362 Nash, Texas 75569. I guarantee you, you are sowing into good soil. Our expenses do not even include a building and light bills. For crying out loud, we spend every dime that we raise on actual ministry or staff or whatever have you. And so this is truly a ministry without walls. Anyway, we invite you to partner with us in giving. And yes, the gentleman you are about to hear has been healing because of you, our generous donors that underwrite the cost of help for survivors of satanic ritual abuse and government-sponsored mind control agendas, Illuminati programming. This is the fruit of your seed. And so there's the invitation, folks. We're going to be right back. You're listening to Discovering the Truth with Dan Duvall. Folks, we are on Discovering the Truth with Dan Duvall. And I'm going to tell you what, we are in for it again today, because we're going to be talking with my guest, my friend, one of the survivors that I work with personally, Robert Van Dreist Mitchell. And for those of you that are not aware, he's already done 4 programs with me on his incredible story, the things that he has seen and experienced firsthand as an Illuminati defector. His information is really, really incredible. And I'll tell you what, he has left a lot of people just with their jaws on the floor, shocked, amazed. And we're going to be going just another step further today into more things that you haven't heard him talk about before, more memories that we've been able to recover as we've done work together. And I'll tell you what, Robert is a hero. He is a champion. He is an overcomer in Christ. I'm so proud of him. And so, Robert, it's a pleasure to have you back on Discovering the Truth with Dan Duvall.
Hello, Daniel. It is great to be back and to have a fifth round, if I recall, numbers we have done so far. And I hope that a lot of listeners will learn a lot more again than with the others before. And we're going to have a few other authors today out again as well, as we had in episodes 3 and 4, if I recall.
Yeah, and it's always interesting. I know that you are the only individual that I've interviewed on this program where we've demonstrated what it's like for someone to actually switch and speak from one of their altars in the middle of a program. And yes, that is something that we're going to demonstrate today again as we let some of your parts talk about what they've seen, beginning actually with the subject of timelines and alternate timelines. And folks, I know that for many of you, this is going to be a real big challenge. But we have talked a little bit on some of our other episodes about alternate timelines, possible futures, potential pasts, things of this nature. And a lot of the conversation around time occurred in programs we did centering on Project Montauk. And Robert was part of that conversation then as well. We're going to be going a little bit deeper into that today. But as a preface, before we really get into it, I just want to raise a few points that really help to create some context around this discussion. And one of them is that in the book of Isaiah, chapter 45, Isaiah 45, verse 7, I form the light and create darkness. I make peace and create calamity. I, the Lord, do all these things. And this is where people begin to really have a hard time with understanding God. Is they ask the question, well, how can God make peace and create calamity? Wouldn't that make him a bad guy? And the answer is, well, no, not necessarily. No, it wouldn't, not at all. As a matter of fact, what God does is he sets up a situation known as free will, where he gives people the genuine ability to make choice. But in order for choice to exist, the possibility to choose has to exist. In other words, I can't say you have a choice, but only put one possibility in front of you. I have to put 2 possibilities in front of you and then say you have a choice. So if you have a choice between apple juice and milk, I have to actually create a situation where there's a cup of apple juice and a cup of milk in front of you and say, okay, now you choose. And what God says in Deuteronomy, he basically comes out and says point blankly, look, to this day I've set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore choose life that you and your descendants may live. And so what God essentially set up was a situation where he didn't set a cup of apple juice and a cup of milk in front of the nation. He set in front of them options of destiny. And he said, I've set before you life and death. There are different timelines that he created, and their decisions determined what manifested. The question is, well, where do those timelines exist, and what do they mean for us today? And I'll tell you what, the answer is quite profound when you talk to someone that has actually visited other timelines. And that person is named Heidi, who is one of Robert's altars. And Robert, I'll let you talk a little bit about Heidi before we have her come up.
All right, Daniel. Yes, Heidi is one of my altars that was created in very young of my early eights, and she was created for the Montauk project, as in particular for the time travel part by writing the timelines. And she has been sent through multiple, quite a number of different timelines that goes back in our history, as well some even went go into the future. And as Montauk programmers found out, and also their masters through other projects, is that our timeline that we occupy on this third dimensional lane, if that is how you want to call it, they couldn't break through the time barrier of 2012. But apparently they did find out that through other timelines they could see beyond 2012. Except for this one, and I feel personally the reason for this one is in the end that this is the original timeline that we occupy, and that is why Jesus Christ came to this particular timeline in order to set the captives free in the future. And yes, you also write in what you said before about choice, because I have heard the question that people ask. Well, why is God letting the evil loose on the earth if he loves people? You could say from a one-dimensional perspective, if he is a loving father, then he only would give us only one option. But, as you also mentioned, he gave us free will. And every human has the option to choose one option or the other. Or in some cases, as with people being born in bloodline families, who initially were steered within, let's say, in the direction to serve the brotherhood or the family or whatever name you want to give it to people from the inside, we also have the option to come out of it and to get completely healed from what we have done and plead our alliance to Jesus Christ and to work on his side. And through his salvation that we are working on for the counseling and everything else, this shows that even if you have been on the other side, you still could ending up on God's side, on the side of Jesus Christ, when you accept him as our savior.
Amen.
And for that I am very thankful. And as I said before, with people, they ask themselves, when he is a loving father, why is he letting us go through this? In the end, people have to realize this lifetime that we now occupy is only a very limited lifetime. The big thing is what happens after this lifetime, and the choices in this life, depending on if we take the right or the left way, the right hand part or the left hand part, that will decide where you will ending up for eternity. And eternity is not like one of those board games, Monopoly. If you go to first start, you don't go to jail. But eternity in heaven or in hell is for eternity, as in the literal sense. And for this, that is why God created all the possible infinite options that we all have and that we all can choose from. Because in the end, he only wants to have the right people who are righteous and who are good. He wants them to have in that particular place that he created, what we call heaven.
Well, Robert, let's talk about Heidi.
Yes.
Now, before we get into her, was she created at Montauk? Or just remind our listeners how she was made and for what purposes she was designed.
Okay. Now, as we already found out, they already did the pre-birth programming with me. from day one when I came into my mother's room. And programming started soon after I was born in a continuation. And I think Heidi herself was probably created around my age of 3 or 4 years old in age. And that was under Dr. Green at the China Lake Weapon Facility in California. Mm. He, by the way, also was a consultant, a genetics consultant to the Montauk program as well, or project. So he also ties into that project as well. I know this is not very known information for a lot of people that has been following the whole Montauk thing, because a lot of survivors, at least not the one on your show, but on other shows, don't talk about this part. But he was a major part within the Montauk as well, beside the shapeshifter Preston Nichols and all the others. But Heidi was created around the age of 4, and I got into the project in Montauk around 1970, so by the age of 6, as Robert. Of course, the official story is that Montauk was created in 1970, and that is a load of baloney, because they already started with the Montauk soon after the Second World War, as we already had discussed in Montauk Exposed with Elena, if you remember.
Yep. Okay. Well, Robert, did you want to let Heidi come out so she can tell us what she saw when they began to use her to visit the other timelines?
Okay. Before that, she started to write the timelines. That started around my age of, let's see, around 8 or 9 years old. So around 1973. 3 years in that I was into the program, because that is when they started to have the capability to write the timelines. Mm. So it was around 1973. So I was then about 8 or 9 years old.
Okay.
That they started to use Heidi for the first time. Okay, I will let her out then, and she can tell her own story. And I hope that people will learn from it again. For now, I also want to say, if there are other survivors out there who know that they also have been, or when they kind of hear things that they recognize from their own life and childhood, I will still say to them that that Bright Ministry is still a safe place for a lot of survivors to get help. I think it is still one of the very few 2-3 places at most that survivors can get help. And yeah, the counselors and coaches of Bright Ministry are able in the future to help those people, especially if they starting to recognize certain things what I will tell, or Heidi, about the Montauk, or even future shows as well. So that beside this, okay, I will give a note the mic to Heidi, and okay. I will be back later on.
All right, Robert. And so, folks, right now, what Robert is doing is he's actually basically, if you think about the person as an airplane, for a survivor, there is a cockpit where the pilot and the co-pilot will sit, and then behind that there is a door, and there's the rest of the airplane. And typically with Robert's life, there are a few of his parts that will be in the pilot chair, you know, living life through his body. And sometimes Robert is one of those, and he doesn't live his life all the time. There are others as well that do that. And Heidi is one of his parts that basically has a seat somewhere on the airplane. But today what Robert's done is he's had her step forward out of her seat on that airplane and step to the co-pilot chair. She's actually been, from before this interview, standing basically right next to Robert. And what he's doing now is turning over the controls of the airplane from the pilot to the co-pilot chair so that Heidi can speak to us freely. And that's called switching. And so if anyone is confused as to why a male would have a female part, again, we've been through this in a lot of other episodes, so I'm kind of just taking some liberties here in not explaining everything. But the reality is that during fragmentation due to trauma, people will split parts, and those parts will have a gender identification that is not always the gender of the physical body, and that's just the way it is. And so with that said, Heidi, are you present?
Yes. Hi, Daniel. Nice meeting you.
Hi, Heidi. It's so good to have you out.
It's, I think, the first time I am out for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, you're so brave, Heidi.
All right, thank you.
Heidi, there's a number of timelines that you were sent to explore and investigate. And I just want to let you tell us all about them. I know there is more than one, and so I just want to invite you to go through them one by one for the ones that you remember visiting and exploring. Tell us how they sent you to them, and then tell us what you saw when you were in some of the other timelines.
Okay. There are the ones that I was sent to as when Robert was little, so far I remember, because it's many years ago by now. I have been at least sent, in a way, how they looked, about, I would say, 12 or more different timelines. Mm. And some that looked, as you see, in pictures from the past. Could be some pictures that you see from maybe a couple of hundred years ago. Mm-hmm. And others I have seen from when I was sent, of course, what looked like the future.
Hmm. Okay.
And some were sent to this timeline, but also others were sent to slightly different timelines.
So let's start with this, Heidi. How would they send you to a timeline?
Okay. For this, what they're using a psychic. Someone with psychic abilities who can sit in it, who can take place in a chair. And then you get all kinds of wires attached to him. And by what Robert explained to me is that they had other people that went through trauma, but also did to Robert when Robert was raped and other things like that. And the energy during the trauma is being stored, as Robert explained, in what we could call computer consoles nowadays. Mm. And the energies were wired to the chair and to the psychic. And what happened then when the chair was activated with the psychic, you saw suddenly out of thin air a ball of light coming in, and out of that opened up a tunnel.
Hmm. What was the tunnel like when you went in?
Tunnel was so black, and it had different colors. And the energy in the tunnel seemed like vibrating. And it's hard to describe it in words. It also had a certain sound that it made as well, like a homing device that made a certain sound. And but it said it had all kinds of different lights as well, going like waves, if I recall. And I was sent with older boys and girls, because there were several boys and girls being sent with us, and we were in groups of 8 to 10 at the time.
And what was it like arriving in a timeline?
The first experience I had, as we were told, we were still on this timeline. My first, very first time. But we were sent in the past. And the first time I was sent with four others.
Mm.
And I ended up somewhere what looked like in the mid-1800s. If I recall, the first time I was sent, what you may call the city of Philadelphia.
Okay.
And the time that I was there, it felt like it was there as if I was there for a week.
Now, when you were there in this other timeline, was it as if you had a physical body?
Yes.
And the physical body you had there, was it your physical, did it look like you, Heidi, or was it Robert's body?
People saw Robert's body.
Okay.
But from my perspective, it looked like me. With my pigtails and everything else. I think that's how you call them.
Now, what was your assignment when you went for that week to this particular timeline?
Now, when I said a week, what I mean is from my experience on the other side, it felt like a week.
Mm.
While probably in real time, we were only away for hours. Or maybe 4 or 5 hours. But when we were on the other side, it felt like if we were there for a week. And I was with another kid, older kid, who was, I think, about 10. And we ended up in a certain part of this town or city. I think it is now a big city, but then it was, of course, much smaller. And people thought, because they saw us with no grown-ups, they thought that we were like runaways, if that's the right name, for kids that don't have parents. So we were taken in by a couple, as I recall. I would think the couple must have been a man and a woman in their 30s.
Mm-hmm.
And they seemed very worried that they saw us with no grown-ups around us. And what I remember is that everything there was, the roads were not like what we have now with stones and everything. Some of the roads were still like dirt and gravel. So when it was windy, then everything was blowing in your face.
Mm.
And also, what was strange to see people, we see now like automobiles, but the only form that you saw with people in transportation then was with a horse and buggy and that type of transportation. So okay. it was quite weird to see that.
Okay.
Especially from our point of view. Also, the language that they spoke then was still slightly different than we speak now, of course, because we are now at least 100 plus years further. Let's see, we are now in what year?
2016.
Yeah, so let's say we talk about probably 150 years back. So things were completely different than now, and also how the people were dressed was completely different.
Now, how did they pull you out?
On the other side, a portal opened.
Huh.
And so, when we cut to the end of the portal, suddenly things got much lighter. And we were told to go to the end of it and step out, what we did. And then we ended up in a completely different environment from where we started, because we started from under, from this base, what is known as Montauk Base. So it was quite weird to suddenly step out in open air. But they must have probably calculated roughly where we, I would think, should come out, because we were not completely in, we were not in town.
So when you came back, you're saying you didn't actually come back to Montauk. You came back here, but you were somewhere else.
No. When we stepped out of the tunnel on the other side, that was outside of what is now, I think, known as Philadelphia.
Oh, got it.
In Pennsylvania, if I'm correct. And what it says, it was weird, because you step in into this very busy, underground space, and then you step on the other side out, what was in the middle, almost in the middle of nowhere. It was in a wooded area, but no houses, no nothing.
Now, when it was time to, then this is what I'm asking, when you were supposed to leave that place, the Philadelphia area, and come back, how did they get you back into this timeline?
I'm not sure the technology that that was used, okay, except that in this case the boy that was with me, he had something on his belt, some kind of it had numbers on it and things like that, and he put in a coat, I guess, of some sort.
Oh, wow.
He pointed in a certain direction, and something opened up again. In this case, we had to be at the same location where we ended up out of the tunnel.
Okay.
But I've always seen him taking a thing of black box out of it from his belt, take it in his hand. We were in total with three groups of two girls and eight boys in total. That is on my first time. And one guy gets a box from his belt with numbers and I think also letters on it, and I see him only pouncing certain things in on the keys, and then this tunnel opened up again. That's what I remember.
That's amazing. So you were back. And this was not the first, but not the only time you did something like this.
No, that was for me the first time, but after that I was sent out many times. And there were others on the inside as well who were sent as well, but I was one of the main ones.
Now, Heidi,
you got another client. Robert told me not to call a name, but C had thanked Robert. Or another personality in that person, who had thanked Robert for saving her during one of the other trips as well. And sometimes Robert himself also was sent through the time tunnels as well.
You know, on that point, Heidi, I have to make a comment here. Guys, what we find is that survivors and their parts, particularly that connect with us, will sometimes have a history or a knowledge of one another, and it's not always in the physical world that they have a knowledge of one another. And that's been a phenomena that we have been able to track a bit, and Heidi is making reference to one of those moments. It's real, and there is overlapping information that we're getting about different places and situations, not all in the 3D earth that we live in. It's just so mind-blowing. But thank you for sharing that, Heidi. Why don't you tell us about one of the other places you were sent?
Okay. another occasion, I was sent to a slightly different timeline, and that was much further back in time than the 1800s. And again, I was sent with a group of 10 children. I was slightly, Robert was then slightly older, and he was sent with or with me out then. We were sent to a different timeline, slightly different, what you call the ancient Egyptian timeline. Huh. That has been one of them as well. Some of the travels, people have to remember this, that not all the travels is to the timelines on this earth. Some timelines also could be off-world as well.
Right.
Because traveling is not only confined to planet Earth. Robert had also occasions that he was sent, and myself, we were sent to Mars to a different timeline.
Right.
Yeah. Timelines, people have to remember the following with timelines. It's like a freeway with all different lanes, and each lane represents, let's say, a slightly different time in opposite to the next one, out of sync of each other. And that is the best way how to describe timelines. Things look familiar, but they are also slightly out of sync. And another thing is that on one timeline you could have, let's say, that another example I can give is I was also sent on a slightly different timeline to the Second World War. I think Robert have maybe mentioned it to you.
Yes. Well, before we get to the Second World War timeline, I really want to let you make a few statements about the timeline with ancient Egypt, because there's a lot of weirdness that happened in ancient Egypt. So I just want to know a few of the things that you saw or witnessed while you were there.
Okay. One of those timelines that I was sent to was, again, slightly out of, as they told us, out of sync with ours, and they wanted to know the events that has happened during those periods. And if I'm correct, if I recall right, one of the timelines that we were sent up in year must have been somewhere around possibly 2000 BC, around that time, or maybe slightly further back in time. And a certain ruler, Pharaoh, is that how you call them, was in power. And what we also observed then is that there were also what you may call like alien beings were present in Egypt. The ones that we have observed when we were there, we were sent in a similar way as I described before. And as on one of those occasions that we have seen so well the little dwarf type of beings. You call them gray beings, huh. If I'm recall. Another one was, as Robert told me, a 7-foot praying mantis type of creature that looked like the insect of the praying mantis. Very thin and very tall and green.
Oh my gosh.
And another one that looked more like a very big reptilian that we have observed on that particular timeline. And it seemed that so far we could see is that they were venerated like a gods in ancient Egypt. As Robert told me earlier today, he has shown me some things that they found on this timeline. They found certain hieroglyphics in which certain beings were seen on those hieroglyphics. So what we have seen on that particular timeline apparently has maybe also been witnessed on our timeline. Because how is it that the Egyptians in their hieroglyphics on the wall could describe certain creatures like what looked like those big eyed greys, as Robert has shown me earlier today, what they found I think 20 years ago or something.
That is fascinating. Huh.
But they were seen as gods in that timeline. And the humans, some of the humans were treated like slaves, especially by the reptilians, by the reptilian type of beings. And those were even bigger than in size than the one as the praying mantis.
Now, you began in on World War II, so I'm going to fast forward now and let you talk to us about what you saw in that timeline. This is really fascinating. Thank you for sharing, Heidi.
Okay, you're welcome. I think Robert may have mentioned earlier, in his earlier part, I think, of the counseling with you, some of it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And at one occasion, we were sent with us a mission statement to see what happened in different timelines of the outcome of the Second World War. And different groups, boys and girls, were sent to different timelines concerning the Second World War and who has won or lost. And on one of those occasions, I was sent with another Heidi. I think I was in a boy as well, if I'm correct, with a few other girls. Some girls were older than Robert, and we were sent to a timeline, what's again slightly out of sync with this one. And in that particular one, we came in that America was quite, certain cities, as we heard on the radio, were quite devastated already. It was at the end of the Second World War on one occasion. And England, if I recall, had made a treaty before the Second World War with Nazi Germany. I guess in part it had to do with, of course, that the Windsors, who were on the throne in that reality as well, they are a Germanic bloodline. So, yeah, they were always more on the side of Nazi Germany because of it, and they made a treaty with Germany, Nazi Germany, to stay out of the war. And they also have let allow the western part of England to be used by the Nazis for installations for their cannons and even their naval bases.
Hmm.
And from there they developed their atomic weapons, as I think they were, and they had thrown them on cities like New York City, what was one of the cities what was obliterated. And soon after, before we went back, there were talk, what we heard on the radio, that the US government was planning to surrender to Nazi Germany because they were not ready as yet to fight back, because they had not the same weapons at that time. And this, if I recall from my memory, it must have been late 1944.
Huh.
About this particular timeline.
And so you were actually in this timeline, walking around and engaging with others.
Yes, and again, we were all in couples of two, like a boy and a girl, etc. Mm-hmm. So we were again taken in by people because they thought we were orphanage. We were orphans, and because of all the violence going on, and again, to my experience, it felt as if I was there for a week. And the things I have seen and heard, especially on the radio, because they didn't have TV in that in the way as we have now. Only very few people, if I recall, had a black and white TV. Because yeah, it was in the early stages of the TV at that time. So only the very rich were able to have a TV, and the rest of the country, of the people, were listening on the radio.
That is something else, Heidi. My goodness. Are there other timelines you wanted to talk about that you had visited?
I was sent again to another timeline with three other children.
Mm-hmm.
That was slightly later, and again that was Second World War, or no, not second. That was before the Second World War.
Okay.
And it was in the mid-30s, and apparently a fascist group of generals took over, and they had established, you could say, a military dictatorship.
Mm-hmm.
In the United States, and there were talk that they wanted to work together with Nazi Germany. Huh. By coincidence, Roberts told me last year, is in reality on this timeline apparently almost a similar thing almost occurred, but that failed because one general apparently didn't want to work on this, and he went apparently to the government, and they had stopped this from happening on this timeline in the mid-30s. But apparently it almost happened for real on this timeline as well. If that would have happened, then the same thing would have happened on our timeline, as in the timeline that I had visited, in which, in this case, the United States was working alongside with Germany.
My goodness.
Or at least the United States at least stayed out of the war.
And you know, as you're talking, Heidi, this is the thing that it speaks to me, is like, folks, you have no idea how important your life and decisions really are. Because other possibilities, we may not think they exist, they do. The design of God is far more complex than we think, and our decisions or inability to act on things, maybe the will of God for our lives, will have huge impact. And that's really sobering. Go ahead, Heidi. What else did you want to say?
Yeah, people must, good point that you made, because people must remind that also on the other timelines, a lot of people are like them. They live their normal lives, their everyday things, going to the factory or to the office. They got kids who play ball and all those type of things. And a lot of them are even not aware about us and about other timelines, because they live in similar situations as us. And each timeline, they got their good points and the bad points, and it all depends on not only on your personal choice, but also on a collective level, the choices that we make as a collective, as a human race, or even on a country level, as we have seen, as Robert has said, about what happened now that we got a new president coming in, and whatever will happen out of that. But I already said, timelines not only operate on a planetary level, it also works on a non-planetary level as well, with other planets and one of the other timelines that we were visit. Again, one of them was also Mars.
So what happened on the timeline for Mars that they sent you
the
to?
The one that we were sent to was in the future.
Okay.
And I was sent around, I think, around 2000, as they told us. And we ended up on the planet itself, what is breathable. But I have to say, again, it was slightly different timeline than the Mars that we see. Although, even on the Mars that we can see in the 3D world, is breathable as well. It is not as our scientists claim that you need to have certain masks and everything on, because we got, as Robert says, soldiers walking on Mars just in normal clothing as we have done in soldiers' uniforms, of course, except they have to be very careful because the wildlife is not as friendly, as Robert says.
Oh my gosh.
There has been incidents. They got, as Robert has seen on our physical Mars, they got certain type of animals, what we may could have called like dinosaurs from our past, fishes, reptilians. And there has been a number of instances that Robert remember when he was on Mars that soldiers disappeared and they only found certain parts of the body because they were snatched up by certain predatory animals. But when I was sent to Mars into the future with four other kids again, and we ended up in a shining city. The city was with glass buildings all around, and it was in the dome. And we ended up outside of the dome, and this dome is an electromagnetic field. You can see through it as if it is like glass, but in essence it is energy. And when we got there, we saw there humans working and living together with other species. One of the species we saw were humanoids. They looked like bipedal, like humans, except they had the blue skin.
My goodness.
I think Robert said earlier last week, some of the beings, or at least the color blue, as Robert described, is from what you see in the movie with this opera singer in the movie The Fifth Element. There's a blue type of
yes, I remember that.
And it was that type of blue.
Huh.
I'm not sure what type of blue that is, but if people remember that movie, the beings that we saw that looked like that, and those beings had black hair.
Well, and you know, the interesting thing is that in Indian, they would call it mythology, but really it's just Hindu tradition, there are a lot of gods and beings that express that trait, the blue skin. It's like a trademark. There's a whole bunch of them that have that. And there's also another phenomena we've run into with other survivors that's been reported to me, just blue people. There's really something to this whole blue skin thing. And Robert, you're just adding, I should say Heidi, you are adding another piece of information on that vein. Go ahead. Please continue. This is fascinating.
Okay. But I said, we were sent to a slightly different timeline again in the year 2000, as we were told, and it was in the 70s. So we were sent probably 20, 25 years ahead. And we were sent to Mars. And we were sent to this dome city, or we ended up in this dome city.
Mm-hmm.
And as we were told, the language that they spoke was not English. It sounded like English, but not completely, because they had a hard time understanding us if we tried to talk. But again, there was also this group, yeah, but were not from planet Earth, who were blue-skinned, and they spoke in, how do I call it? It's that they don't speak verbally, they speak through thoughts.
They call that telepathy.
Okay, so that is how they communicated, and it's strange to hear suddenly people speak to you not by sounds, but we normally speak, but that they speak directly with thoughts in your head, and they told us we only have to think. To think thoughts, and then they could receive what we were thinking or saying to them. So that was quite a weird experience, because I was always taught when you speak with someone, you open up your mouth and sound comes out. So that was quite a weird experience. Also, those blue people were quite tall. If I took the humans that were in the city, and we have seen different, we saw humans with light hair and light skin,
mm-hmm.
like what we have in America and in Europe. But we also saw humans that had, like, let's say, black hair and very dark brown skin. Probably, I think closest to them is like the Aboriginals, and also probably some of the people that come from the, let's say, India, from those type of parts of the world. And they were, in comparison, small to some of the bluest people, because some of the bluest people, I would guess, they're probably over 7 foot tall. If I take in comparison to the humans who maybe reached around 6, and the blues people were quite tall in comparison, and some of the technologies that we saw is they don't have cars as we have. What they had is, it looked like a car on the outside, but it seemed to go on electromagnetic waves. It's like floating in the air.
So
that was quite weird to see and quite scary, because what goes up, as Robert says, also comes down. And that's a scary thought, to be honest. And this city also was quite busy as well. It was bustling with people all over. I would say that in the spaces that we were, or parts of the city that we saw thousands and thousands and thousands of them, and all working side by side. And it looked also quite peaceful and clean, but it was a shining city. The buildings were all of glass. It looked like glass, and the pavements were like shining white. It looked like white with a shining coat over it. And now, yeah, they had also things like, they had what we could see, animals, or what looked like animals. I have not seen animals like pets that we have as dogs or cats.
Okay.
But I had different other animals. I have seen what looked like a horse, and smaller animals like as well, but not as we have, like cats and dogs. And yeah, it was a weird experience. But it's strange to see cars flying over your head and things like that. And it's, yeah, so we were there for, again, the experience sounded like a week, that we had to go there to observe, and we had to write down everything we saw and things like that, and we had to bring it back to the Montauk base. And so far, the people we saw, or the beings, seemed to live in peace and in harmony.
That is something else.
And they were, the humans there were brought there a long time ago, as we were told.
Huh.
And they lived there for, apparently, for thousands of years. was something what we were told by some of the humans so far that I remember.
Now, I'm going to pause you here, Heidi, because I want to just put something out there that under any other circumstances would just be so outlandish sounding that it's not even worth saying. But God began speaking to me during my journaling time about how what he had in store for my life and really the ministries of others in this present time would lead to the redemption of people on other planets. And when he first started talking to me about this, I thought I was kind of loony and a little bit off, because I said, that's just ridiculous, God, if this is even the voice of God, because there are no people on other planets. This is ludicrous. But, you know, I just wrote it down anyway, because that's what I do with my journaling time with God. I don't share most of what I write down, and my journal is pretty hands-off, because there's a lot of things in there that I just can't share. God takes me very far beyond what I talk about in that journal. However, as Heidi's explaining some of these things, it's making some of the things I know I've heard God speak about make sense and have context, have a grid. They have transported people around. Some of them are on other planets. And that's just the way it is at this point in history. Somehow God has a way to sort this out. Do I know what that is? No. But do I know that he has something in mind? Yes. Are some of you going to be involved in God's strategies for other people that happen to be part of these things and present in other places? Yes. And so this information isn't just something to dismiss. This is actually intel that may clarify things that some of you are hearing from the Lord about things he wants to unveil in your lives and ministries in the future. And again, I'm not suggesting strategies or protocols, or I don't know. But what I do know is I'm hearing information that seems to substantiate things I've gotten in prayer, and it's wild. So Heidi, was there more that you wanted to say about this particular domed city, or was that about it?
I would say the people that told us is that they were brought there over the course of what we call thousands of years, and they were brought from various places from the earth. They were in group with offworlders, as they call them, what we call aliens. And again, some of the aliens that they described that brought them over is what we, as Robert says, sees coming and going throughout history, back and forth, like what we call the gray aliens, in conjunction with some that look like angels, or with at least like tall humans with blondish hair. I think you call them Nordics. I think.
My gosh.
And people have been brought over there. And as I was told, they got also other places besides Mars where they have been brought as well. I think they mentioned some of the moons.
Mm-hmm.
I think some of the moons I think of, as I recall, Jupiter.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the names they mentioned was a moon called Europe.
Okay.
Or something like that, if I recall right. And so they had similar things over there going on as well. They didn't say what the reason was why they were brought there. They were left out about that, but it has been going on, they said, for thousands of years, that they have been brought various groupings of people, and this city has been quite old, as they said. Has been at least, as they recall, what we would call like at least 1,000 years or something like that, in that order, even though it looked quite new, at least from my point of view then. But you know, that's really in there, what they thought was at least 1,000 years old.
That is just mind-blowing. And I know right now, Heidi, you have everyone that's listening with their jaws on the floor. I mean, this is just incredible information and insights. Were there any other timelines that you were sent to that you want to talk about? Or because there was some other... Go ahead.
Yeah, they tried to send us on this timeline also into the future.
Mm-hmm.
And that was beyond 2012, but that failed because we ended up every time in a barrier, energy barrier, that we couldn't penetrate on this physical plane,
you know,
what we call the third dimension. And the Montauk scientists never could find out why that is. While we were also sent on other timelines, and in those other timelines, on various occasions, they were able to send people much further into the future.
Hmm.
On one of those occasions, I was sent again with a group of other young people, boys and girls, and we were sent, I think, it was somewhere around was way back into the future. It was in this century, in the 21st century. I think it was around 2150, if I'm correct. And in that world, it was completely different what we see now. There was no such thing as a democracy anymore. Everything was before we got there, at least 15 years before that, there was a dictatorship ruling by what seemed to be now what we now know as the Rothschilds, and the people under them. And when we arrived 15 years later, that was around 2150, the situation was slightly changed because they had an artificial intelligence that was running, that was controlling everything on Earth. And people were almost like slaves. That is the people that has survived the onslaught before. Because when the Rothschilds took over, they had wiped out 2/3 of the Earth population on that timeline. As they have also, as you know, plans in this timeline, if they think that they can get away with. So the population was only down then to less than 2 billion. And what we were told is then, that was then around 2016. Yes. No, that was in 2050. Pardon my that I said 21. No, that was in 2050 that we were sent. And then the world was ruled by artificial intelligence, and that controlled everything. But the onslaught on the human population took place around 2035, when the Rothschilds, through their puppets, took over. And they started a war that decimated 2/3 of the population.
Got it.
And the war started between the United States and Russia in that timeline.
You know, it's so interesting because, you know, from others, I've heard that one of the plans was to have a new world order in place by the year 2000 or even 2012. And obviously, these kinds of plans have not worked out. And here you are telling me that they have plans extending, and Eric can even look at timelines going to 2035, 2050. It's that means they know that there are a lot of different ways things can play out, even on the dark side. They don't have a full control over anything, and they're able to look at, search out a lot of different timelines and ways things can play out. It's just very fascinating to me.
That was one of our missions that we were given. The leaders that among us that went with us. Mm-hmm. Later, Robert became one of, when he got older into the program, he was one of those team leaders that went with other kids. And that is when, on one of those occasions, he saved one of the people that I think work also with Bright Ministry, when that altar of that person came out to thank Robert. That was a couple of months ago,
okay,
if I recall. But yeah, we were sent to investigate certain events, how they could play out on different timelines, and from their point of view, what they could do about it, of course, because they probably found out that not everything went or could go as they had hoped for. And Robert also was told on this timeline that the original timing for their New World Order was planned for 2000.
Oh, well, there it is.
But then, as Robert found out in 77, I'm not sure if Robert has told you this, that at one point after his 13th year initiation under the Vatican, he was brought to the mansion in England of the Rothschilds. And when he was there, one of his aides of Sir Evelyn Robert the Rothschild came in, the aide, with the bad news that the Romanov had survived. And I can imagine that has thrown out the timeline for 2000, for the year 2000, out of the window. Because initially there had planned, the plan was for a long time to install their New World Order for the Age of Horus, as they call it, as Robert was told. It was planned for the year 2000.
Now, Heidi, are there any other timelines that you want to tell us about?
No, there's at the moment, maybe another time that when more memories come through.
Okay.
Sometimes I have trouble with the memories, and sometimes they can be painful.
We're working on it. Heidi, you are so brave, and I want to say thank you so much for coming out and talking to us and sharing all of this information. It's not easy, and I just want to tell you that I'm really proud of you.
You're welcome. I had hoped, as I think you said to Robert initially, the plan was to speak with another person who I will not mention now, who also had a Heidi being used. Maybe that will maybe still happen one day in the future.
Yeah.
I pray for that.
Yeah.
And that would be nice to have then two Heidis on your show about the Montauk.
Well, I'll tell you what, why don't you let Robert come back up and take it easy. Thank you so much, Heidi.
You're welcome, and I hope one day to come back in your show. Okay. It was a pleasure to be here and to help also Robert in his own healing as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, good luck with the rest of your show.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And I will let Robert now back out then. And till soon. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hello.
Hi, Robert.
Hi. So how did Heidi do it?
Well, we're still recording. She did outstanding. My jaw is still on the floor. There were things that she shared just now that I have not heard you tell me before, which
okay.
I'd be fascinated, usually.
Okay. I wonder what she has thought. I have to wait till the show comes out then.
She did a fantastic job, though.
Like everyone else.
Right. So we have another 20 minutes or so, Robert. Can we get into Black-Eyed Children for about 20 minutes? I want to take the rest of this time and spend it talking about the Black-Eyed Children. Now, this is a phenomena that has been pointed out by a lot of people. I think the one person that gave it a lot of attention earlier on was L.A. Marzulli. And I know that I've had reports of Black-Eyed Children coming to me from different survivors, and there's been different descriptions, and you certainly are one of them. And you've had your own encounters, and your parts have had encounters with Black-Eyed Children. And I wanted to let you talk about it from your perspective and what you know about them. So, just plainly stated, Robert, what can you tell us about Black-Eyed Children?
All right, it's good to be back back in the seat, in the front seat, after Heidi came out. And concerning Black-Eyed Children, so far I have seen online, it seemed to be a recent development, I think probably no less than 10 years old, if I recall, that they have been seen more white, more in the open. And the origin, so far I know, from the Black-Eyed Children are varied. Some, depending what part of the world, some are connected, goes back to Africa, to the witchcraft coffins over there, and the voodoo, the whole voodoo culture, because we had experience so well within the US and Europe, but we have also had experiences in Africa. I'm not sure if wasn't Brittany that spoke about the spirit children?
Yeah.
Yes, and during one of those occasions also, as she told me, that was after the show then, is that on one of the occasions when they did their rituals and a portal opened up out of the fire, she saw her kids coming out of there. And those kids had black eyes, it were like sinkholes. When Brittany saw them, and the photos, or the, I have looked it up over the last couple of weeks, because you said to us that it's going to be one of the subjects. So I have seen about the black eyes is only a recent thing here in the West, but the origin and what those what they are made of is demonic. In some cases, depending on from the African point of view, some of the kids, street kids, who has been employed, undergo ritual abuse, for one, a lot of them, and they're going to be possessed by demons. And from the moment that they go in full agreement, or even the soul has been kicked out, when the demon completely take over, that also make their eyes go completely black, and those children, and adults, by the way, as well, adults. We talk about people, because I talk people as now grown-ups and children, are fully and completely demonic. There is no human substance anymore in the body, what we normally would call a soul. And they only can operate and do their thing when we as humans give fully our agreement. And one of the way how they operate in the West is that they operate in pairs normally. And what they do is, in order to get your agreement, they're knocking on doors of people, especially late at night, or at least in the evenings, most of the cases, and they ask if they can come in for maybe a phone call or whatever. And from the moment that you let, if you from the moment that you let them in as when you sit in your house, yeah, then you give them agreement to come in your life. It's the same as what the Bible says, I think, about demons. If I'm correct, you can probably correct me more about it on that. I think there's a story in the Bible somewhere about, yeah, that evil only can operate when you give them permission, like demons.
Yeah, well, that is just something that is understood about any kind of deliverance ministry. The reason why spirits are able to afflict people is because they have an access point somewhere. And the access point can be, generational. It can be willful sin. It can be cursed objects in the home. It can be inner vows. It can be traumas that the person has endured. There's a whole host of reasons why a person has an open door to some kind of demonic affliction in their lives. And sometimes it's even genetic, as we've learned with our work with survivors. So, you know, yes, that's absolutely true. But go ahead, continue talking.
Okay. What I said, they only can operate in people's surrounding when people allow them to get into their home, when they ask to come in for whatever they're asking the people for. So, listeners, when you hear this, and you're going to have in the future, my God, I hope it will never happen, but when it happens, and suddenly you got two kids with a hoodie on, and you see complete blackness, and also you feel a very negative energy, don't open the door, and don't let them in any way. And the same when you're driving in your car, and you're standing, let's say, with a stoplight, and suddenly you hear a knock on your windows, it's the same thing. Don't let them in, because from the moment you let them in, you give them permission to be in your life, and whatever they will do then with you. Concerning the origin, as I said, they are demonic. Some of them probably started out as humans, but they fell in the hands of the Illuminati programmers, and the kids were completely tortured and other things, but also opened up the body for demon possession. And that is how then those demonic spirits can take over. And from the moment they have completely taken over the body, then when the original soul has maybe left the body, or is as a prisoner in the body, then also for some reason the eyes seem to turn completely black. It's like black sinkholes, like a black hole, literally, with no life in it. Also, for some reason, they seem to get also almost like white, very light skinned, and that makes, of course, the contrast even more more bigger. But most of them always wear like a hoodie type of thing over their head, and that is also how you can recognize them. And people must realize most of the time they always operate in a pair, as in two. And it's not only with children, because I know it is in the media, in the alternative media, and in shows that they talk about the black-eyed children, but there are also adults like them as well. And they also created the bodies. Some of the bodies are also created artificially within places like Dulce, as I have seen. And then somehow they revive the body alive, and then they planting those demonic soul matrix, or whatever you want to call it, in them as well. And that is another origin that I have seen as well from the 70s and 80s onwards.
And that's really fascinating, you know. And that's what I've actually had concluded as well, Robert, is that with the phenomena of black-eyed children, it's kind of like everything else. It's not that they exist because of only one source or one origin. There's a number of testimonies coming forward that I've run into personally where it's like, you can't put all of these in the same box. There's different types of black-eyed children, and you're even bringing in adults into the conversation. I know that's true.
I have seen so well children as adults.
And you know, in that whole Africa thing that you brought up initially, I actually found that being documented in one of the books that I referenced in a program I did way back called Water Spirits and Underwater Cities. I found a book where a gentleman from Africa was talking about the black-eyed children over there. And he didn't call them black-eyed children. He just described these street children that would be taken in by the warlocks or whatever these guys were, and the witch doctors, and they'd be taken to underwater cities, and then that they'd be...
That is one of the places that I have seen them myself.
Oh, my gosh.
As a child.
Oh, my gosh. Go ahead.
In those cities, what I was shown is that a lot of the things that what we take for granted in our world, like TVs, like other technologies, computers, and anything that we use, are originally created, and the concepts coming from those places, from the underwater places under the Atlantic and other oceans as well. But the ones that I have been brought to were the entrances were before the coast of Ghana and also Nigeria. But I also know that they also brought in, let's say, politicians from the United States, Canada, and other countries. And if it was brought in from the United States, some of the entrance points were, let's say, in one of the islands of the Bahamas, among other things. And from there, they got a tunnel system that goes directly to those underground cities. But in those cities, yes, you see there are all type of creatures. I know that we have been learned through fairy tales that mermaids, for one, are positive. They were initially positive. Unfortunate, as you also know, Satan has corrupted everything what God created for his own purposes. And the same with what we would call like mermaids. When I was brought there on at least three occasions at the entrances of this on the city underwater cities, they had guards like mermaids that were about at least, I would say, 9 foot tall, and they had prong type of weapons that gave electricity off when they touch you.
Now that is, and you know, there have been other survivors that have told me about the mermaids as well. I'll tell you what, there are cave drawings of mermaids that go back way far. There's absolutely zero question in my mind that the phenomena called mermaids are merfolk is real. It's absolutely real. It's really interesting that you're suggesting that they were initially good or a creation of God. I don't even know.
They were created by someone.
Mm.
And as we all know from the Bible, is that God, Lucifer, aka Satan, and his band of fallen angels, they not only corrupted the human genome, they corrupted any form of genome, plant life, animal life, anything that God created good.
You know, I'm going to throw a joke out here, but I really have always assumed that cockroaches were a manifestation of satanic genetic counterfeiting. I just have a hard time believing God created that nasty thing. I hate cockroaches. I lived in an apartment for 2 years which had them. And
oh
I just
God.
Said, this is pure Satan. Anyway, I mean, I know that some people, come on, there's worse things out there than cockroaches, Danville. Well, yeah, but they're pretty bad, and they're pretty high up on the list in my world.
They could be on itself maybe a hybrid species from a different species that Satan created.
Oh, my goodness.
That sure is possible, but initially, all the species that God created as basic species, yeah, say as we know, Satan corrupted everything that God created because of his hate for God, his disdain, and everything else. But no doubt he also have crossbreed his own the DNA of the fallen angels with everything possible, and also crossbreed it every species with another species. I'm not going to twist that, because I think that is also the case as well. But to say per se that, yeah, merfolk are evil, because we have seen them on the ground, doesn't per se say that maybe they were initially not God's creation, because in the end, as we all know, is that Satan corrupt every life form.
That's really...
If he can get his hand on.
That's really, really interesting, Robert. You know, guys, we are out of time. Robert, this has been a phenomenal program. Heidi has left me. I'm still blown away by what she was sharing. And I'll tell you what, we're going to definitely be having you back, because we have so much more to talk about. I mean, we got through 2 points on our list of five, and we were being conservative here. So, folks, there will be more conversations I'll be having with Robert Van Dries Mitchell in the future. Did you have any last words you wanted to say before I close out this program, Robert?
No, not at the moment, except that, yeah, if survivors need help, Bright Ministry is still the place to contact, especially if they heard certain things what suddenly ring the bell up till their soul about that they had similar experience. I certainly would urge any survivor to contact Bright Ministry for help. I know there is at the moment a waiting list, unfortunate, but still I feel the Bright Ministry is the only one of the very few places that they can go to for help. And yeah, that's the only thing what I wanted to say. And it was a pleasure to be back on your show again, and I certainly hope for more shows to come in the future. And Heidi says also she hopes to be back in the future as well.
Awesome. And, well, Robert, why don't you throw out your new blog?
Yes, let me get the address on it. The new blog, because the other one was hijacked, is called Revised: Lifting of the Illusionary Veil. And I will give Daniel later on the link of it, so people also can maybe also find it then through Bright Ministry as well, if you can put up the link there as well. But the new name is Revised: Lifting of the Illusionary Veil, and it is by Robert Van Dries Mitchell.
Perfect. So, folks, that'll be in the show description. Robert, like I've said many times, brother, you are so brave. I'm so proud of you for coming this far, for making the sacrifices that you've made, enduring the things you've endured, and continuing to press into your healing journey and to share your story and testimony to bring hope, to bring insight to others. And I just really, truly respect you as a friend, and also as just a child of God. And so
it's part of my soul mission as well, so that is why I had to survive everything that I had to go through. And quitting is not something that is in my dictionary.
No,
so I will never quit, because that is some giving in what the enemy wants. And if the enemy throws at me something, I will throw it 3 times back, or 7 times.
Folks.
So from that point, we will never quit, and we will continue to share our story in blog form and in through your shows and other shows that come our way, so that we can help to set other survivors free and educate in the meantime also the people out there.
Mm-hmm. Folks, that's the word. We are out of time. You have been listening to Discovering the Truth with Dan Duvall. Happy Thanksgiving. Until next time, God bless and Godspeed.
Discovering the Truth with Dan Duvall is the premier radio program designed to center you on the kingdom of God, to equip you with faith in Jesus Christ, and to unveil the truth behind the lies. This program has been a production of Bride Ministries. You can find us at www.bridemovement.com. At our website, you can contact us, access resources, and support us with donations. We need partners in order to continue to produce our vision, which is to promote unity in the body of Christ worldwide and assist in the creation and development of sheep nations. Partner with us and be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Until next time, God bless and Godspeed.
Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? If you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. Choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, we're all set for the party. I've trimmed the tree, hung the mistletoe, and paired all those weird-shaped knives and forks with the appropriate cheeses. And I plugged in the Bartesian.
Bartesian?
It's a home cocktail maker that makes over 60 premium cocktails, plus a whole lot of seasonal favorites, too. I just got it for 50 off. So, how about a Cosmopolitan or a mistletoe margarita?
I'm thirsty.
Watch. I just pop in a capsule, choose my strength, and...
Wow, it's beginning to feel more seasonal in here already.
If your holiday party doesn't have a bartender, then you become the bartender. Unless you've got a Bartesian, because Bartesian crafts every cocktail perfectly in as little as 30 seconds. And I just got it for $50 off.
'Tis the season to be jollier.
Add some holiday flavor to every celebration with the sleek, sophisticated home cocktail maker, Bartesian. Pick up your phone and shake it to get $50 off any cocktail maker. Yes, you heard me. Shake your phone and get $50 off. Don't delay.